Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Making Hestery. My name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the Hesses. And we're back together.
We are.
Yeah. Last week, you weren't here for the episode.
That's right.
Or at least one without you.
Yep. All by yourself.
Yep. For the 2 minutes I was down here.
Yep.
So if you didn't see last week's episode, please go listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's honestly one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard in my entire life.
It really is. It's like, even when you are not the one who has experienced it, it's like life changing.
Yeah.
Just knowing, like, whoa.
Yeah.
That actually happened.
I imagine, like, it's a story that's so, it's so unusual and so amazing that I kind of don't think most people would believe it.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't actually know Chris.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But it's, you know, he's somebody that we know, and I've had him to, you know, we've had him to the church several times, and we've found multiple opportunities to have him come. And whenever he comes to speak, my one request is just tell your story.
Yeah.
He's an amazing teacher.
He
could teach on anything.
Yeah.
But like, we've heard some amazing testimonies and stories, but I've never heard anything like his before.
No, it's amazing. And makes us cry literally every single time, even though we know what's coming.
Yeah.
I'm like, we know this story. We could tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
But every time he tells it, I'm like, oh my gosh. It's it's so good.
I know.
So good.
The first time we heard him share his story was in 2015 or 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was sharing the part of the story where he's sitting next to Jesus and he's, because of like his shame, he doesn't want to look Jesus in the face.
Right.
And so, you know, he tells the story of how Jesus kind of grabbed his head and pulled it toward him.
Yeah.
Because he needed him to look him in the eye.
Yep.
And he called me up in front of everybody and did that to me.
That's right.
And at that point in my life, I was still like not wanting to be in front of a crowd.
Don't really want to be seen.
Or anything. Yeah. So I was very uncomfortable. But I've wept every time I've heard him tell that story.
Yeah. And in that moment, when you were actually like being used in the illustration too, I mean, you wept in that moment too. Yeah.
I don't remember time.
Okay.
You may be thinking of when we had him.
School.
So we had him come back to our school that we were running.
Yes.
And he was sharing that story. And just for old time's sake, he called me up to the front.
That's right.
And I was crying so hard that he had to have somebody else come and do it because I couldn't get it together. I mean, I was like shaking, sobbing. I was crying so hard. Ugh. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
So if you haven't listened to that episode, you've got to go hear it.
Yes.
It was an episode that I recorded several months ago for our church. And last week we were busy. Kids were sick. You had been sick.
Yeah.
We were traveling. There was just no good opportunity for us to record. And so I was like, well, why don't I just release that episode where I interviewed Chris? And so,
it is a pretty, pretty decent substitute episode.
and currently a movie is being made about his story of his father, primarily his father, but also him. It's a story that's so good that a movie is being made about it as we speak.
Yep. With like legitimate actors too, not just like
we don't know too many details,
right? But like, it's not like somebody down the road
from
like, hey, I'd love to make a movie like in my garage about this. It's like a real movie.
Well, he told me, he said the producer I'm working with said that like he's not going to cut corners, and he's going to do whatever it takes to get like the money and the funding to make this movie what it deserves to be, because the story is so good.
I'm so excited to see it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. So anyways, I had mentioned we traveled a little bit last week. One of our best friends got married in Nashville.
Woohoo!
Yeah. That was so fun. Such a great wedding.
Yeah. It was awesome. It was really like sweet, small ceremony that was just like really intimate and just everything that made sense for the couple.
It was perfect.
It was perfect for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was fun. We got to see some old friends and some people we've kind of kept up with, but just don't get to see very often. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
Yeah. It's always fun reconnecting with people, especially those like that group of people. I feel like that was such an instrumental time in our lives that the people there will always hold like a really special place in my heart.
Right.
Of like, wow, you actually, like, I felt like they were a group, like overall, obviously more specific people, but overall a group of people that like really restored the idea of friendship and the reality of friendship for me, especially. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, we can have like good, deep connection friends.
Yeah. Cause we went for a while without really having any.
Yeah.
Like we had friends, but I think for a while we felt like we didn't have like our people.
Yeah. It was that after college kind of like lull where like a lot of people moved away.
Yeah.
We stayed. The people who stayed also we weren't really close with. Yeah.
And so and we got married and then that changes dynamics too. Right. Because not all our friends were married.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah. So good weekend.
It was an amazing weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So the last episode we did together, we had kind of mentioned that we were going to keep talking about the mind specifically. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about the gospel. We've been talking about how there's this thing in people everywhere that people often want to change, and they recognize that their behavior is not always super desirable.
Right.
And often as parents, we assume that the undesirable behavior we see in our kids is the problem and that all of our effort needs to go in changing them and changing their behavior.
Right.
And it's all very externally focused.
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize that actually there's a good chance that a lot of that behavior was learned from us.
Right.
And so that awareness is crucial, but even that does not solve the problem itself because the problem then still remains of, well, if they're learning that from me, that means I'm acting that way.
Right.
And if I'm acting that way, I'd like to change, but for most people, it's like, I don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it was never modeled for them, or there's no good picture of like, okay, this is how this person is doing it, so let me copy what they're doing and see if that works.
Yeah, and you know, you may be able to pinpoint some of the things you want to do differently.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like to be a more gentle parent. You'd like to be kinder. You'd like to have more self-control, and the thing is that our change requires more than just our own willpower,
because
that doesn't really work.
No.
And, you know, the stats even show, I forget what it is specifically, but it's something like 80% of all New Year's resolutions fail within the first, like, 3 weeks or the first month.
Right.
Because
I've been one of those statistics many times.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we've all, you know, kind of approached the new year thinking like, all right, new year, new me, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to be totally different. And it's like, well, no, you're not, because your behavior is a product of a lot of little things.
Mm-hmm.
It's your habits. It's the way your mind has been trained to think. It's the way that your body has been trained to respond and to act and to move.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot more to changing our behavior than just wanting it to change.
Right. Yeah. And so often too, I find like specifically with those goals, they're really big.
Yeah.
And so it's like a huge lifestyle change of like, okay, I want to work out like, because this is such a classic one, I'm going to work out like 5 days a week for an hour every single day. But before January 1st, you didn't work out at all.
Right.
So like, do you really think you're going to go from not working out one day at all a week to working out 5 days a week for an hour? I think no. And so there's just that gap too of like, okay, maybe let's start a little smaller, a little more practical. Yeah, which it sounds so fun to be like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to like, you know, I'm going to get motivated. I'm going to wake up early and do my workout.
Mm-hmm.
And if like from me personally speaking, I have done that and I'll do it for the first like week.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday comes around and I'm like, oh, I don't have to wake up. And that feels really good to not have to wake up early.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes downhill from there.
Yeah. Yeah, most people, their idea of a New Year's resolution is more like a New Year's revolution.
Right.
I'm going to revolutionize my whole life.
Yes. Yep.
And so people often, they recognize that there's a change that they'd like to see in the way they live, the way they act, in some, you know, some aspect of their life.
Yeah.
And I think people who go about it like that, like the way you're describing, it never works.
Nope.
Now, there are maybe a few exceptional people who are able to just tell themselves what to do and do it every time.
Yeah.
But that's an extremely rare
gift
to be able to do that. So, you know, a big part of retraining ourselves, whether it's our mind and our body, and who knows, maybe we can get there's a lot of depth to what we're talking about, and we're kind of skimming the surface right now. So maybe one day we'll go there. But, you know, our behavior is the product of, like I said, like a lot of little things. Mm-hmm. It's our the habits. So we have habitual ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. We have habitual ways of feeling. Our bodies are literally trained to react and to do things without even conscious thought or effort. And so some examples I've used in the past of that are like when I drive, because I've been driving for, you know, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Not quite. Whoa. Yeah.
That's crazy.
17 years.
Yeah.
I don't really have to think about how that goes. Mm-hmm. I don't have to think about what I need to do.
Right.
I can just get in the car and my body just automatically does everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not actively thinking about which pedals or the gear shifter or how to turn or the turn signal.
Yeah.
I'm not actively thinking, consciously thinking about, and I am, but I'm also like not, because it just happens.
Right.
Another example I've used, sometimes I'll be sitting on the couch reading and without even realizing it, my phone's in my hand and I'm on Instagram.
Yep.
And it's like,
that's a scary one.
It is. And I think that that's not unique to me. Like that's an extremely common
thing. Heard so many people say that, like, all of a sudden I was just like scrolling through Instagram and I don't even know what happened.
I don't know how, I don't really know how long my phone's been in my hand, but it just happened absent of like conscious thought of I'd like to pick up my phone and open up Instagram, right? So our behavior is the product of all these little habits and cycles and patterns of ways that we've been trained to do things.
Yep.
And I think we've talked a bit about this, but like we've, even in the church, have largely been discipled by the world and we've been assimilated to the ways of the world. Mm-hmm. And so we are very busy, we're very distracted, and we are allowing these different parts of us to be trained by worldly values and worldly ways. And then all of a sudden we are confronted with the reality that we're not acting the way we'd like to be acting.
Yeah.
We're not maybe even like practicing Christianity the way we'd like to be practicing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, it's no wonder that we're not acting like Jesus, because we are not being assimilated to his ways and his teachings.
Right.
And so like you can't be a disciple of the world and then wonder why you're not acting like Jesus.
Right.
You can't have both.
Yeah.
If you want to act like Jesus, you've got to be his disciple. Mm-hmm. And you've got to actually take the time to sit at his feet, learn from him, to, you know, allow yourself to be transformed by grace rather than this like purely self-effort, willpower, I'm going to change on my own, you know. It just doesn't work like that.
Right. It's that transition of knowing about Jesus to really knowing Jesus and understanding how he was, how he is, how he responds to things, how he spoke to people, how he loved people, and actually doing those things rather than just going like, yeah, I've heard about that, but actually saying, okay, this is what Jesus did. So now I'm going to put that into practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think the putting his ways into practice, I think that begins at a different place than even just recognizing like how he would treat people.
Mm.
Because that's the end goal,
yeah,
is that we would treat people the way he treated people, that we would love our neighbors the way he would love his neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But practicing the ways of Jesus begins with understanding what kind of like habits did he create that allowed for the behavior that he exhibited to naturally come.
Yeah.
Because like, I don't want to be the person who says, well, Jesus was patient, so I'm just going to be patient.
Right.
It's like if the content of my heart and my mind doesn't allow for patience, I'm not going to be able to just say, oh, I'm going to be patient today.
Right, yeah.
Right? And so, but that's where so many people are caught up of saying like, I want to be more patient with my kids.
Yes.
I want to be more loving. I want to be more attentive.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, what is it about your heart and your mind and your body that's not allowing that to happen?
Yeah.
And we need to address those things.
Mm-hmm.
So for Jesus, it was like, how often through the Gospels does it say that he would withdraw to solitary places to pray? Mm-hmm. He did that frequently.
All the time. Yep.
All the time. Because he recognized that if he was going to maintain, if he was going to maintain an ability to love everybody the way he did, he had to tend to his heart.
Yeah.
He needed to tend to his mind.
Mm-hmm.
He had to tend to his body.
Yeah.
And create habits within them and train them in such a way that they allowed him to have the capacity to be the way he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we could talk about all of those differently, not on this episode, of course.
Right.
Holy cow, it's a lot. But let's talk a little bit about the mind today. Because I think that the mind is one of the most important things that we need to address in our transformation.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very important and also very easily swayed.
Yeah.
Our mind is.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a tricky one.
It is. It is. Because everything in the world is competing with Jesus.
Yep.
For not just a position of lordship, but for the position of influence of how we think.
Right.
The influence of how we feel.
Yep.
You know, he'd love to have that influence, but he doesn't get it unless we give it to him.
Right. Yeah. He's not going to force us into, like, you know, you have to pay attention to me.
And yeah, often we think that with our kids, but our approach maybe isn't always so gracious.
Not quite as gentle. Right.
So yeah, I'd asked you if you would share a little bit, because recently, and this is not something that's unique to you, but one of the things that we're all going to have to address is the reality that our mind is being fought over.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like I said, Jesus would love to have that influence to be the one teaching us how to think and teaching us how to feel and how to address our thoughts and our feelings. But the world is also very adamant and is much more aggressive, I think, about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's way louder and way more like just... I don't want to say attention grabbing because of course the Lord is that as well, but it's just, it's right in front of your face. And it's also like with the phone thing, like you said, if we pick up our phones, it's all in there. Like sure, there's Jesus content in there too, but it's very much so loudly the world.
Yeah. But the world is distracting and it's hurried and it's causing our attention to be split. And the less attention we give to Jesus, the less he is able to teach us and to train us.
Right.
So yeah, you've had recently a little bit of just sort of a battle, I guess, of the mind. Would you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's been a couple months, I guess, of a process. And at first, which I feel like this is a very common thing, that it's kind of sneaky.
Yeah.
At first, of just like these little thoughts, these little digs that kind of like just don't really feel good, whether it's like something that somebody says or just a thought that I had about myself or whatever, of just like these little things that I was able to dismiss at first. Like, I guess to give a more concrete example, friendship was something that I was really struggling with and just thinking like, I don't know if I have like the type of friendships that I really desire and I want. And then I started questioning, well, is it because of something in me that people like don't want to be around or don't want to be friends with? And so incoming all sorts of insecurities there, you know, of like, oh shoot, maybe I'm not a good friend. Maybe I'm annoying. Maybe I do this, you know, and you know, I think it's very, I think it's a very common thing for people. Once you have like one little thought, unraveling happens very quickly. It's like when you pull on a string on a sweater and it's like, and it all just like starts coming. And so I was kind of starting to experience those things, but it's something that I've dealt with in the past and it just felt so like, oh, no, that's not a struggle anymore. And so I just dismissed it and I didn't really even like bring it to the Lord because I was like, I've got this.
Yeah.
It's fine. But it wasn't. It wasn't fine. And I think there was a level of postpartum emotions and hormones there, but definitely not the full contributing thing. But back to it, there was just like a compiling of thoughts and insecurities and things that were coming up in my mind that I was like, okay, what is going on? Because I just felt like every single area of my life was being attacked. And I was having all these thoughts of, well, I'm not a good enough mom, or I'm not a good enough wife here, or I'm not a good enough friend that this person actually wants to connect. I'm not being a good children's pastor, you know? So it literally leaked to all areas of my life, all parts of like my like the hats that I wear, I guess. And so with that, I was really emotional and really struggling to understand the truth about who I was. And in the midst of this, you know, I would like pray about it. I would ask the Lord, like, okay, show me the truth. But I didn't really like fully surrender it to him, because I think partially I was feeling shame that I was back in that spot.
Right.
Because I was like, I've dealt with this before. Why in the world am I back here? And because it felt like it was my old man. And I was like, I'm not that person anymore. Right. Why is this coming up?
I thought we've moved on from thinking like this.
And so I think there was a level of shame that kept me from like just bringing it to the feet of Jesus and being like, you know, please take it. And then also just a level of like, am I crazy? You know, like wondering, like I didn't want to say anything. And I like didn't really say anything to you for a while either, just because it felt like it was such a mental battle that I just needed to handle by myself.
Sure.
And there's, I think this is probably a relatable feeling, maybe, that when you have all those thoughts combating for your like true identity in Jesus and who he says you are, when you're not agreeing with those things, it's like, well, if I come and I tell somebody that, they're going to like, they're going to think that I like don't even like believe in Jesus. They're going to think that like I'm just not who I am pretending to be. And there's, I think, the little bit of like an imposter factor there of just like, ooh, this is a scary place to be. And so, especially when you're in like leadership, I think there's that very much so that I was like, I should not be on staff at a church and be dealing with these things, which is so silly, because just because you're in a leadership position at all doesn't mean that those struggles go away.
Yeah.
And so throughout this whole process, I knew the truth. I knew that me saying like, I'm not a good wife was not true, because one, like, I know that I have like brought that to Jesus, and he has spoken so much truth into me about like who I am as a daughter. And so that my sonship is what everything that I do flows out of. And so that means like, if I am a beloved daughter of the King, that means that I can be a good wife. If I'm a beloved daughter of the King, that means that I can be a good mom. And it's not that like I'm striving for those positions. It's that I needed to return to that ultimate identity of being a daughter to allow those things to actually flow the way that they were meant to. And so, yeah, it was just a battle of, or it has been a battle. I won't say that I'm like fully even through it yet, because there's still moments where I'm like, okay, apparently we're not all the way done. But it's been a battle of knowing the truth and having those truths in my heart, but actually recognizing that my mind is believing something else in the moment. And so it's just been a time of kind of reconfiguring all those truths again, and having to go back through the list of like, okay, right now I'm believing that I'm not a good wife. Who do you say that I am, Lord? And even like coming to you, like, I didn't want it to be just from you. And so I think we had this conversation that I was like, I am not saying this to put the responsibility on you to change my belief, because that might help temporarily, but then I'm going to be right back to square one if I just solely rely on you speaking truth into my life. That's a great help. That is something that I think all husbands should do for their wives, is to edify them and build them up. And same thing for wives to their husbands. But if I relied solely on you for that, that would be a really like a shaky foundation to base the truth of my identity off of. And so
compared to Jesus,
Yeah. Right. So what I have been in the process of doing is returning to Jesus and letting him redirect those thoughts and letting him replace those lies and giving me the truths again, even though I was like, I know the truths, but facing the fact that I was not believing those truths in the moment.
Right.
So,
and that's an important distinction to make.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think probably helpful for you to be able to say, like, I know that this isn't true,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I'm feeling as though it is true.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, like, of course, like, you're an amazing mom, you're an amazing wife, you're an amazing kids pastor, you're mm-hmm. an amazing friend, you know, everything you're doing is incredible. But recognizing that, like, there are these competing, like, thoughts and yeah. feelings of, okay, Jesus, I know what you would say about me, but that just doesn't feel true in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for that, you know, on that front, I'll say that that's one of the reasons that we need to be pursuing truth.
Yeah.
In the form of God's word, in the form of
right.
just sitting and praying and dialoguing mm-hmm. with the Lord. Because if we don't understand truth from his perspective, we will run the risk of creating alternate truths.
Right.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, if you didn't have that foundation of truth against which you could weigh what you were feeling,
mm-hmm.
then you may have been way more likely to just accept what you were feeling as ultimate truth.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because in the past, like, before I learned the truth about who God says I am,
mm-hmm.
those things were just my,
yeah.
That was it.
That was reality.
That was my reality. And mm-hmm. so I was like, well, this must be true because this is what I'm feeling.
Right.
And so why would I even question this? Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I think there were things in my mind of like, well, surely this can't be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, surely life is better than this. If Jesus died for me, you know, mm-hmm. like it must be different. But I had no way. I had no like practical steps to take to get to the actual truth. Because what I felt like what I was in and living was the actual truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't even really question it.
Yeah.
Until it was brought to my attention that, hey, actually, Jesus really loves you. And he thinks you're great. You know, he doesn't think that you're a terrible person.
Yeah.
And so, like, when we're stuck in that, like you said, like, there's nothing else to weigh it against.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we just have to be able, we have to come across the truth by reading God's word, by mm-hmm. asking Jesus, hey, what do you think about me?
Right.
What do you love about me? What do you say about this role
mm-hmm.
in my life? What's the direction that you have for me to go mm-hmm. from here?
Yeah.
And seeking him on everything, because yeah. without that, there's just, I hate to be like, there's no hope, but really mm-hmm. if we're looking to the world for our edification and to build us up.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
Because there's always going to be, and this was one thing that actually, it feels so counterintuitive that this would be helpful, but I feel like I need to say it because I feel like somebody listening could actually use this in their life. I can't remember where I heard this. I don't know if it was when we were in school or what, but the source was credible. But they said, like, there's always going to be somebody who is like better looking than you. There's always going to be somebody who's smarter than you. There's always going to be somebody who is like better at whatever area of life you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was like, ugh, you know, like, yuck. But then they said, but there's nobody who's going to do those things the way that you do them.
Mm.
And the way that the Lord has like gifted you to do these things. Mm-hmm. There's never going to be anybody that is a mom like me.
To our kids.
To our kids.
Yeah.
And there's never going to be anybody who, yeah. you know,
mm-hmm.
you can apply that to every area of life. And that was so encouraging to me.
Yeah.
Knowing that like there's always going to be somebody better, because immediately that takes out the desire to compare
mm-hmm.
for me personally, at least, because yeah. I was like, well, there's always going to be somebody better. So I'm not even going to try to weigh myself against this person.
Mm.
I'm just going to try to do the best, or to the best of my ability, I'm going to live how Jesus has gifted me personally.
Mm.
I'm going to live this area of my life out.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, I want to be like that person. I want to be a mom like this person is. Mm-hmm. Saying, I want to be a mom like Katie is supposed to be
mm-hmm.
in the fullness of what the Lord has placed inside me.
Yeah.
And so that eliminates that temptation to compare.
Yeah.
And because comparison just immediately is going to bring negativity into your life.
Yeah. Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes.
Yeah. And I love that. But of course, that comes back to the reality that in order for you to know how Katie is supposed mm-hmm. to be a wife or a mom,
yeah.
you've got to give Jesus the opportunity to tell you.
Yes.
So for me to be a husband and a dad the way Brian is meant to, mm-hmm. I can't do that unless I actually understand who Jesus, how yes. he's made me, and right. what he says about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you said, we find those truths in the Word.
Yeah.
We find those truths by personally connecting and with
just
Jesus.
Prayer.
And yeah. prayer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is the way that you figure out. And it's not like, okay, Lord, I'm going to tell you what I want to be, and you can tell me, okay, mm-hmm. go ahead. It's asking him, because sometimes our desires aren't going to line yeah. up with what he has for us.
And maybe worth saying too, that it's not impossible that through like reading the Word and through prayer and dialoguing with the Holy Spirit, it's not impossible that he may actually bring up ways in which we can improve.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because that's a part of it too.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's unless we give him the opportunity to reveal what like the healthiest version of marriage mm-hmm. or parenting or friendship or whatever.
Yeah.
Unless we give him the opportunity to help us understand what the healthiest version of that is for us, mm-hmm. we'll live our lives in comparison.
Yep.
And like, you don't need me to be this guy over here, this mm-hmm. guy over here. Like, what you need is for me to discover who I am.
Yes.
And to be that. Mm-hmm. The same thing. Like, I don't need you. I don't look at our friends' wives
yeah.
and think like, oh, I wish you were like her and I wish you were like her. Mm-hmm. What I need is for you to know who you are
yeah.
and to be you. And that right. will be the most fulfilling thing for our family.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
When you're truly walking out the identity that is in you
mm-hmm.
and it's in there.
Yeah.
Whether you feel like it is or not. Like, it's in there. It's just up to us to agree mm-hmm. with what the Lord says about us and know that if he's put it in us and put that desire there, then we're capable of achieving that mm-hmm. with him.
Right.
Big.
Yeah.
With him, because yeah. we can't do it on our own. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. yeah. So let's give just a few kind of practical thoughts for people listening. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've mentioned some. Like, you've got to be reading the Bible.
Yeah.
If you want to know, well, the temptation that we have is to allow our truth to be built upon our experience mm-hmm. And just our perception of reality.
Yeah.
And sometimes we perceive things in ways that are different than the Lord perceives them.
Yeah.
And we think about things in ways that are differently than the way he thinks about them. Mm-hmm. And so unless we are continually returning to him, returning to his word, mm-hmm. returning to him in prayer, we will run the risk of allowing our idea of truth to be built upon a foundation that, like you said before, is shaky.
Yeah.
It's unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to be returning to the Word. We need right. to be spending time in prayer. We need to be finding ways to bring our attention to him throughout our day.
Yeah,
because I don't want to be somebody who views him through the circumstances of our life, because sometimes life is hard.
Yeah.
And if we're facing a really difficult time in life, something hard, something painful, if I'm viewing him through the lens of that circumstance, then I will likely conclude that he must not be good because mm-hmm. life doesn't feel good right now.
Yeah, that's.
But the more we will practice bringing our attention back to him mm-hmm. and allowing him to be the center of our focus,
yeah,
the easier it will be for us to view our lives and our circumstances through the lens of who he is. Mm-hmm. And so that way, when life does get hard, when painful things happen,
yeah.
when we experience these battles of our mind,
mm-hmm.
we are able to conclude, well, this must not be the best it can be because I'm viewing this through an understanding of who he is.
Yeah.
And he's so good.
Right.
And he loves me so much and mm-hmm. he's so faithful.
Yeah.
So I want to view my life through the lens of who he is. And allow the way I think about life and think about circumstances to be built upon the truth and reality of who he is and what he says.
Yeah, absolutely. And know that, like, if you're in a time like I described, you know, mm-hmm. of just being in the midst of the battle, and it's like this, like, it really sucks in the middle of it. It's like, this
yeah.
is not fun. But knowing his character, knowing the truth about who he is, gives, like, you know, to put it plainly, a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, mm-hmm. you know that like that is not the end. Mm-hmm. It's you're not finished here. This isn't what the rest of your life looks like. This is just a little bump in the road on the continuous, you know, journey that is life, you know, of where it doesn't look perfect.
Right.
But I have complete faith and hope that like on the other end of this, that I'm going to be even more solid in my identity mm-hmm. as long as I keep returning to him, as long as I keep returning my focus to him, if I allow it to go off again. Mm-hmm. And what you were saying before, just like allowing him to be the filter of which we see our situations. Mm-hmm. I think that also is aided by really not treating him as a doctor when we're just in bad situations. Yeah. And treating him as a consistent, constant friend mm-hmm. that we're doing every part of our life with.
That's really good.
And instead of going and running to him when we're in the middle of a crisis or when something's going wrong, mm-hmm. we actually go through the joys of life with him as well. Yeah. And we bring tiny little details throughout our day that mm-hmm. seemingly might not matter, but they do to him mm-hmm. and he wants to do those little things with us. And just knowing that like, he's not there just to put a Band-Aid on it. Mm-hmm. He's there to walk through it with us. He's there to walk through the joyous times with us mm-hmm. and knowing that like he is a friend and a companion and our Lord that we can look to and go through every piece of our life with.
Right.
And I think,
I love that so much. 'Cause I think it's really easy to just look to God when things get really hard mm-hmm. and when life hurts and to wonder like, why, if you're so good, why is this happening? Mm-hmm. Or to start accusing him of being the source of your pain, the source of, you know, the difficulty.
Yeah.
When in reality, just like you said, if we can make a practice of bringing our attention to him all throughout our day, every single day mm-hmm. on the good days as well as the bad days, we'll get accustomed to viewing him through the reality of how he actually is.
Yeah.
Not just the assumptions that we build about him, mm-hmm. especially the assumptions that are often built when we just look to him at the heart during hard times. Yeah. But when we will allow ourselves to see him for who he really is mm-hmm. in the good times and in the bad times, you're right, that will help us to create just these patterns and these habits mm-hmm. of thinking about life through the understanding that he's good,
right.
he's faithful, mm-hmm. he loves me. And if something is not good, this isn't the end.
Yes.
Because he's the God who works all things for good.
Yeah. And that practically doesn't have to look like it did in scripture where Jesus withdrew and went to be alone for, you know, however long. It can look like literally taking 1 minute in the middle of your day, just be like, thank you, Jesus. And just acknowledging him mm-hmm. and knowing that he's there. And because I feel like when you say like what, or when we say like you return to Jesus, return your focus to Jesus throughout your day, that can feel really daunting if you don't know just the simplicity that a relationship with Jesus can be mm-hmm. of just literally just including him and acknowledging that he's with you through every step of your day. Like with Nora, just a quick practical example with school, I've started like praying with her every day before we even open a book.
Yeah.
And just saying, Lord, like be with us while we do our school. Help us to be patient with each other. Help us to learn as much as we can in the short amount of time that we have, you know, and just setting that precedent of like, let's do this with Jesus, because if we're going to do it by ourselves, we're probably going to get frustrated.
Yeah.
And, you know, we still have times of getting frustrated, but it's easier for both of us, or it's become easier for both of us to really like push through those like tougher moments in homeschooling.
Right.
To having that foundation of like, okay, of prayer, of inviting the Holy Spirit, inviting the Lord in that with us.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It doesn't always have to look like dropping everything you're doing and going sitting alone on a mountain somewhere, which there is a place for, like the practice of silence and solitude.
Oh, for sure. There is like do that still.
Do that
when you can.
Find times. Yeah. And like something I'm working on is becoming more of a morning person because I don't like the mornings.
No.
I like the nights.
Yeah.
But then by the end of the day, like, you and I are tired. We just want to hang out.
Right.
And so, like, that's not my prime time, you know, for, like, silence and solitude and prayer. And so I just, knowing myself, I know that that happens best in the morning. It's just a matter of, like, getting myself up early.
Right.
But for the sake of just sitting in total silence and solitude. And sometimes that looks like reading the Bible. Sometimes it looks like just sitting and just contemplating, you know, the Lord, or dialoguing with him, or interceding, or, you know, it could take many forms.
Yep.
So there is a place for that.
Yep.
But you're right. There's a practicality to just throughout your day, whatever you're doing, if you're making lunch, if you're in the shower, if you're driving somewhere, if you're cutting your grass, anything you're doing, you can have these moments of just turning your attention back to Jesus and just recognizing him, recognizing his presence with you, recognizing his goodness.
Yep.
And that, you know, training our mind to do that is one very small and very powerful way that we can start reshaping our minds.
Mm-hmm. And I was shocked whenever, like, I started being more intentional about, like, really doing that. It's amazing how much it transforms your day.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't think that just being like, hey, Jesus, wouldn't really do anything, but it does.
Yep.
So if you're in a place where, like, this has not been a practice of yours, you're fine, first of all. Nobody's mad at you.
Well,
I feel like I need to, like, just take a moment to remove any shame if you're feeling that in this moment of, like, oh, I've never really thought about doing that, because neither did I until I did.
Yeah.
And just give yourself space to, you know, practice it. And that's all, that's what it takes. You have to start small and build up from there.
I'll end with this thought. There's a pastor, there's a bunch, several pastors who we like, who are kind of in the, I guess you could say, the spiritual river of like spiritual formation.
Yeah.
And so one of the big guys, and he's not alive anymore, but Dallas Willard was kind of one of the pioneers of this thought. And since then, there have been lots of, like, people that, whether they would, he would have called them his spiritual sons, or just people he mentored. And that's kind of been spreading with guys like John Ortberg and Richard Foster. And now there's, like, a John Mark Comer, John Tyson, Tyler Staton, Pete Scazzaro, Rich Velotis. There are all these guys that are doing really good work in this vein. But Rich Velotis, I heard him say one time in an interview, he said, people often, you know, will beat themselves up if you're trying to spend some time in prayer, but your mind is just wandering. It's wandering. It's wandering. You know, if you're praying for 10 minutes, your mind might wander 50 times.
Right.
And that can feel frustrating, because that still happens to me, I'll be sitting in the morning trying to pray, and all of a sudden I'm just thinking about my day, or I'm thinking about something totally random.
Or I walk in and I completely interrupt everything.
So, but he said, it was just one of the most encouraging things I've heard in a long time. He said, rather than, like, taking on the shame from feeling like a failure, that you can't even sit and pray focused for 10 minutes. He said, rather than beating yourself up for that, why don't you consider that an amazing opportunity during that 10 minutes, or during that whatever period of time? If your mind wanders away 50 times, consider that 50 opportunities to turn your attention back to Jesus.
Ooh.
And it's just a totally different way, totally different way to look at it.
Oh,
and
that's
now
so good.
All of a sudden in the morning, when I'd find myself, my mind wandering, rather than, like, being annoyed with myself for not being able to just stay focused for more than a couple minutes, I consider an opportunity to just bring my attention back to him.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And it's just such a small mindset shift. That makes that moment look completely different.
Yeah.
And is so much more honoring to the Lord too. That, like, hey, you're worth it. I'm coming back.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let this rabbit trail take over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Cool. That's good for this episode, I think.
All right.
Great. All right. Well, for everybody who watched and who listened, thank you. And we appreciate you all. And once again, my name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're making history. We'll see you next time.